Blog Talk Radio. These were the hippie days.
Beatnik days, Shard. Hippies came later, man. Take these to that freak show over in the corner.
Time travel, parallel futures, mutants and assassins. You can't expect me to believe all this.
Nevertheless, it is true.
I'll take those.
Real copy. It's been a while.
I've been told you can read our thoughts. Search Bishop Mind. You will see the truth of what we are saying.
I do not like to use my powers, but if you insist... I don't know how I came to be a mutant. I would not have chosen to be one, and I can't imagine being the leader of anything. I want to be a doctor. Still, if what you say is true, it would appear that I am destined to help humanity.
They're doing what? That does it. All right, wise guy. You and your freako comrades can just hit the road.
I don't understand. Is there a problem?
I've served you jerks from the college, but I ain't putting up with any trouble from their kind.
Skin color prejudice? That's so pathetic, it's almost quaint.
It ain't quaint. Who are you calling pathetic? You Mongols must be some kind of medical experiment.
I think you just insulted the woman I love, lowlife.
You okay, Professor?
Yes, and please stop calling me that.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yes, folks, welcome to yet another edition, another funky, factual, funny, necessary edition of the Comic Shop. The Grindhouse, I should say first, which overlaps the entire program. The Grindhouse edition of Afro Radio presenting the Comic Shop. It's a mouthful, folks. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I want to go to a quick nerdcore gruel. We have a lot to discuss. We've got to talk about Sharknado briefly. This growing phenomenon, we got to talk about it because everyone else is talking about it. Everyone from Mia Farrow to Mayor Cory Booker, everyone's weighing in on Sharknado. So, of course, Comic Shop crew must weigh in on it as well. And, of course, we got to talk about Pacific Rim. First up, quick Nordcore track. This is a soundtrack from Despicable Me 2, Pharrell Williams, Happy. 2 minutes. We'll be right back. Let's get into it. Let's groove.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Yeah.
enough of that. Perhaps our official Sonic nerd, the acronym nerd, that is Pharrell Williams from the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack, happy. And we are all happy because this is the Comic Shop, folks. Feel free to buzz on in with your opinions, your questions, your protestations, what have you. We're going to talk about all things pop and pulp. And then at 7 p.m. we have Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. And feel free to participate in that show as well. Of course, speaking of the Captain, your time is now, sir. Let's get to it.
Yes, sir.
And then we have Daryl B., the indefatigable one.
Who knew that Tiffany versus Debbie Gibson would get knocked up from the echelon of B-movie schlock?
I take it you're talking about Sharknado.
There we go.
Yeah. Listen, I had I'm always coming across information, gentlemen, all the time. If you know, sometimes I just glance at it and say, oh, what the hell is that? So I glanced at the Sharknado thing a few days ago. All of a sudden, I look at the newspaper this afternoon, and it's become some kind of phenomenon where people like Mia Farrow, who's supposed to be a real actress, and she is, Mia Farrow to Newark Mayor Cory Booker, everyone's hashtagging and tweeting about Sharknado. So for the uninitiated, Sharknado is an exploitation, schlocky, sci-fi movie of the week that is, I guess the premise is so crazy and so over the top that everyone's talking about it. Essentially, it's basically sharks being caught up in a tornado, hence the portmanteau Sharknado, or the Franken word, Sharknado, and these sharks are falling from the sky and eating people on land. The most goofiest premise probably in the world, and yet everyone has something to say about it, and now it's taken on a life of its own, and as we spoke about this behind the scenes, as always, everything is about money. And it's getting 2 million plus viewers on this thing. It costs about that much to make, hence money's being made, people are happy, and it's schlocky as all get out. So, Daryl, if you will, what's your thoughts on Sharknado? And I want to dovetail on Sharknado from Sharknado to talk briefly about exploitation cinema, and then we'll get to Pacific Rim. Your thoughts, sir?
Okay. Well, like I brought up before, that happened in like a mega shark versus a cobra mega shark type movie where Tiffany fought. Was against Debbie Gibson, essentially in the movie, and people went crazy about it. Oh my God, Debbie Gibson versus Tiffany. Oh. Movies like this, they don't go to the cinema, but if they latch on to somebody's consciousness, or if the trailer is so freaking absurd, you know, people with the Twitter age and stuff, they'll start talking about it. And one person hit one person, which hit two other people, which hit four other people. And all of a sudden, we have a Sharknado experience. I caught some of this on a rewind coming home from work. Came home from work, put this on, and I went, hey, this is another usual sci-fi movie. You know, you don't get caught up in the tornado, and now they're taking over Los Angeles. You're getting people bitten in the streets. My sharks in the tornado. You're getting people falling into like the shark and trying to work their way out. And we're seeing video of this. Hi, Ian Zeroing. Nice your career worked out after 90210. But there's three things that I took from this. One, the Tower Reef phenomenon is still alive. You know, there's some people that no matter what crap she puts out, no matter how much of a respectable young woman she acts in the social media, you know, they'll follow her throughout anything. Two, like I said, social media. You get something in the public consciousness, it goes everywhere. You have the San Jose Sharks mad at ESPN for even linking them to the Sharknado thing. And I'm like, hey, Your nickname is the Shark. He's a passing thing. You're getting angry over this? You just extended this story a little while. And three, Sci-Fi Network is going through the roof with this thing. I mentioned in the blog a couple of weeks ago how they were putting Sinbad and Primeval now on Saturday. So there was no more Saturday is the most dangerous night of the week for their B-movies. Well, now everybody knows that it's now Thursdays because this is going through the roof. And coincidentally, Sci-Fi says this Thursday they will be resetting track data. But, you know, let's capitalize while the iron's hot. While everybody's talking about it, here's the movie everybody's talking about. Enjoy it. Don't use your brains. Back to you, Afroners.
Yeah, you know, one thing, Daryl, listen, Sci-Fi has been showing these films for many years, though. That's what I'm looking at. Like, why are they discovering this now?
Because there's a certain elitist type of fan who I will see this in the theater. I will see this, But when it comes on screen like this, made for a quarter of the budget, and it's totally free, oh, this looks ridiculous. Oh, this sucks. Listen, Hollywood, Bollywood, I forget what they call cinema from Hong Kong and Asia. A lot of actors make their bones doing C, D, Z-list movies, where it's not the top line or the second tier, you know, and they make a pretty good living at it. Hey, the most famous example I give is Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Was she a good actress? No, but people forget how she got famous. Well, the breast is one thing, but she hosted a show late night for years upon years that showed nothing but B and C horror movies. And as the host, she got popular. There is a fascination of watching people, dumb people, and smart people make some of the stupidest mistakes imaginable and dying at the hands of some of the most grossest characters imaginable. That's the fascination with it. And another one that made a big money for it, and people forget, Mystery Science Theater 3000. And they showed was bad movies. They ripped on bad movies all the time. But we watch. Why? Because we watch to hear the jokes. We want to make the same jokes we were watching them make. And when you watch Sharknado, you'll make the same jokes too.
Well, this is definitely one of those instances where it's so bad it's good. That's another factor in this. But also, one thing that came to my mind is, where have these folks been? And I'm talking even beyond what's happening at Sci-Fi. I mean, the exploitation genre is a thing. It is a thing. And going back to the whole thing of it's so bad, it's good, I think that's what has worked into Quentin Tarantino's career. Now, we know he's an auteur. We love his films. But he grew up on this schlocky stuff on Roger Corman exploitation, blaxploitation cinema. Him and Robert Rodriguez, because Machete Kills is coming out soon. But these guys have been able to extrapolate all that stuff, all that schlocky stuff from the 70s, and have, in essence, made it into a parody and into high art. So now you have, and I mentioned this before, now you have to look at this stuff differently, but I'm a little perturbed that all of a sudden Sharknado is a thing, and it's it. When just a few days ago, I just happened to look at cable, and he had this special, this documentary, and I would implore our audience to check out this documentary. Matter of fact, I'll make it available on our Facebook page. So definitely go to Afronerd Radio Facebook as well as Afronerd.com. I will put up the documentary. And the documentary is called Machete Maidens Unleashed. Machete Maidens Unleashed. And it really talks about the Filipino exploitation cinema period that essentially was, not only did you have popular Filipino directors, one who died, we should have really mentioned this last month, Eddie Romero, who's a god of exploitation cinema and Filipino exploitation cinema, and undoubtedly someone that was a influence on Quentin Tarantino. He died in June at the age of 88 from prostate cancer. But when you talk about a lot of these black exploitation films that are in the pantheon that we probably mentioned over the years, T.N.T. Jackson's one of them. These films not only were directed by Filipino directors, but they were also, when they had these exotic locales, they were made on the cheap in the Philippines. So when you go to this, when you look at this, you know, when you look at this documentary, of course, Pam Grier is going to be there, Gloria Hendry is going to be there. I mean, all these top flight black actors and Filipino directors, everyone that are probably still working to this day, they came from that. I mean, some of these movies, they're goofy as hell. They had a character called Batman. I forgot the name of the film, but he really was a Batman. And it was so almost like the Island of Dr. Moreau, Daryl. But the reason why I mention this stuff, because it is history now. I mean, you know, you look at it now, it looks like it's goofy fun. This period saved Hollywood. You know, the captain talked about this a lot. These movies were made on the cheap in foreign areas, foreign locales, but they saved Hollywood. Now we have these TV movies called Sharknado, and we're shocked and we're hashtagging, we've been here before, so respect should be due. That's it. Check out Machete, Matins Unleashed. It'll be up momentarily, Afternerd.com and Afternerd Radio's Facebook. Any thoughts before we get to Pacific Rim?
Can I add something?
Yes.
Piggyback on what Daryl said. You see, we're living in a time now that the virtual world sequesters the real world, and that's what happened with this right here. He used the word consciousness. The real consciousness, especially if you're 40 or younger, the real consciousness is actually the cloud mindset known as the internet, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, now they got video with Instagram, you know, that's where it is. So everything transfers between there because the mind has to interact with the brain. That's how it's supposed to be, two separate items, by the way. Then it sequesters the real world. Whatever's happening via on the internet back and forth becomes the real world. So it blows up 1, 2, 3. That's what's happened. That's the consciousness now. And years ago, we didn't have that. So the history, his story, be careful with that, his story can disappear. And as the great Afro-Nerd said, that's right. That's what it was. It saved Hollywood. That's all.
All right. Listen, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove, about 2 minutes. This is from Adam Warrock. This is his Battlestar Galactica interpolation, his masterpiece involving Battlestar Galactica as a theme. And when we get back, we've got to discuss Pacific Rim. Got to discuss it. Great film. Better make some money, though. That's my fear. It better make some money. All right, folks. We'll be right back. This is So Say We All. Adam Warrock, Battlestar Galactica. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
From the first breath of the first tribe and the first colony, the first place that they set foot down where they fall on knees and pray to the gods. Back before the Great War, spread the people to the planet, to the ends of the galaxy. Planet Earth, where the 13th colony settled. Helios, Alpha, and Caprica, where they worked with metal. They played God, artificial intelligence, and built up a military complex in the heavens with each ship. Staff, the commander at the CSC. Exo to the CAG, and the crew down in its belly, and the pilots, and the vipers, and the raptors, where they fought. Before and it will all happen again because
feels like the real thing. Can't distinguish synthetic. We can love and we can hate. We can stare death in the face. And though it hurts us the same in a second, we're resurrected. Downloaded, there's many copies, there's many agents. Maybe aboard your fleet, they share the faces of those you love so dearly and don't want to believe. That we look, talk, feel, act, and breathe the real thing. Yeah, backed up by centurion soldiers. Better pray to Zeus, Artemis, Ares, Aurora. Maybe some of them will hear your prayers and make your faith true. But we forgive you, cause you know not what you do. What if God is real? What if he knows everything that we think and feel? What if your sins are the reason for humanity's downfall? Heed our prayer, so save me all.
Perhaps the official representative of Nerdcore Groove. That's Adam Warrock, So Say We All. Again, folks, available at Adam Warrock's website. And that's a free download of an entire EP devoted to Battlestar Galactica raps as a theme. The boy is nice. Folks, this is the Comic Shop. This is Grindhouse Saturdays. Going into a quick turnaround, we spoke about Sharknado. Let's get into something that's a bit more serious, although one could say it's equally implausible, but I still love it. This is Pacific Rim time, folks. Guillermo del Toro's Tour de Force, we finally saw it. I'm pretty sure Daryl saw it because he sees everything. So I want to defer to the captain this time. Captain, unpack for our audience your thoughts on Guillermo's latest work, Pacific Rim, Jaegers versus the creatures?
Kaijus.
How could I forget? Kaijus.
Well, let me begin. Let me start with the wrongs, and then we get into everything beautiful. The only thing that was wrong, which really isn't a wrong, because you're not going to get everything perfect, was the fact that the dialogue at times was a bit weak. The storyline could have been a bit stronger, and the music could have been a bit better, you know? Could have been more epic. But that being said, as I said on Wednesday, there was only one event that matters, and this was an event. Visually stunning. In my opinion, I think it made Transformers, now there's a new Transformers coming, who knows what that may look like, but the past Transformers, it made it look like a junior high school project. Visually stunning, totally incredible from that standpoint. I thought the movie was definitely a must-see. I thought actually was the best movie I've seen all summer so far. You know, I thought Superman was a good movie, but I didn't think it was a must-see. I think that this was a must-see. Afterwards, I was sending texts to people and say, you got to go see this movie, you got to go see this movie. Bring your kids, leave the wife at home. Because, you know, women a lot of times are haters on this type of thing. But some of them may want to go see it. So I thought it was definitely a great movie. Now, the only thing is, according to IMDb, when you spend $180 million, that's according to IMDb. There's other figures out there, but according to IMDb, that's the Internet Movie Database. They spend $180 million on production. A lot of times with these movies, there's another $100 million, $75 to $100 million that they don't talk about for advertising, P&A. For some reason, I just feel they didn't spend that kind of money. I think they spent more like $50 million. So that's the type of money that you have to make back in a scenario such as this. So I'm a little bit worried because the budget is so big. Can they make back the money? That's all. That's all I really have to say. Go see the movie, and that's about it. Back over to you, Sir Raffiner.
Yeah, usually I defer to Daryl B., but I'm so excited about this. And let me say my piece, and then we'll hand the floor over to Daryl B. A couple of things. I'm just going to give you kind of quick thoughts, not really somewhat disjointed thoughts. Godzilla is going to be a waste of time after this. Folks are already saying this. We've already seen a number of Godzilla's cousins, all these kaiju that have come out, these different ones. Who cares about Godzilla? It's just one creature now. I mean, they might as well go home. And I mean that. I mean, the last one with Matthew Broderick, people talk about that. Talk about Sharknado was better, I suspect, than the last Godzilla. If you're going to do a film that is really a part of Japanese cinema, you better study it and you better do it right. Shouting out to Quentin Tarantino. When he takes on other cinematic genres, he has studied them. You can't just reference it and be some timey with it. And that's what happened with that film, 13 years ago. I love the film, just as what the captain has talked about. It is visually stunning. It really is an immersive world. And this goes to show you how masterful a filmmaker Guillermo del Toro is. Anytime you see any of his work, whether it's the Hellboy stuff or what was the other film? The Blade 2. There's other films that are out there that he's done. He really knows how to – he has a way when it comes to what a film should look like. He has a signature look. And he always has his, you know, he has Ron Perlman there somewhere. So Ron Perlman is definitely his boy. So he has to put him in somewhere. And he's not a person that will disappoint you. I will agree with many of the points that the captain brought out, that if you're going to critique it, it has some issues. It's never going to be a perfect film. But all I can think of, I love Iron Man 3. I'm not going to disparage it so much. Man of Steel, you know, that's been a difficult film all around. People still talk about Man of Steel because depending on where you come in, maybe generationally, that might determine how you feel about Man of Steel. But even all of the destruction in Pacific Rim, I still feel it was more plausible than Man of Steel. And Man of Steel was one guy. And you had all these robots. Anyone that grew up on Frankenstein Jr. and Gigantor, and all those Japanese horror films or Japanese disaster atomic monster films, Mothra versus Godzilla, a Mecha Godzilla. No, those were man in suit films, MIF, and we still love them. We still love them, but this is a whole different thing. And actually, I'm very curious as to how the Japanese market will accept this film because it is definitely an homage to them. It's an homage to Japanese filmmaking, and you had Asian actors and actresses in full effect. So I love the film, but the main component for me, I'm being completely selfish here. The working title for Justice League Dark, which is a film that I know full and well Guillermo is begging to make. Every 5 minutes he's talking about this thing. He's obsessed with Justice League Dark. And the working title is Dark Universe, which is a cool title. I'm in. Even the title is cool. Dark Universe, I'm in. But I'm fearful that if this movie does not make any money, now it's tracking on Fandango, or was tracking on Fandango quite well, because the word of mouth is saying, like the captain said, go see this film. The reviews are pretty good on this thing. But we got Grown Ups 2, which is, I love Chris Rock, but I didn't see Grown Ups 1. I don't care. But there's some people, that market, there's people, that audience is there. I think it's going to make some money, perhaps even internationally. But if we want to see Guillermo do more work, and he's not going anywhere, but to really do it without difficulty, I want this movie to succeed. But it is a must-see. Go see Pacific Rim. Darryl, what are your thoughts?
I liked it. I will say I did not like it as much as I thought I would like it. And the problem with that is American cliches. I hate American cliches. And this one, unfortunately for Del Toro, it is riddled with American cliches. Government deciding what's best for, for attacking strategy, i.e. running away, check. Head pilots falling in love with one another, check. The superstar pilot sees the old veteran comes back in, instant rivalry, check. You know, all of those, I could have done without. You could have alluded to it, but you could have done without it. That's the only thing that brought it down in my eyes. I thought the music was okay. I thought the fight scenes were okay. But here's another American cliche. The climate for the battle is always the same. I wanted to see battles in daylight. I wanted to see a nighttime battle. Every battle was nighttime in rain. If it was raining at night, I would be there. Oh, yeah. Why? The London golf. Hey, casual attack coming. Why? Because each one of the major battles happened at night during a fierce rainstorm. Gee, that's a pattern, isn't it? When somebody knows that? But with me being so critical, I will say this. Here's my dig. Here's my dig at DC Captain. Pay close attention. It's a tremendous amount of foresight by DC and Warner Brothers to separate from Legendary Pictures two weeks before this film. It showed a great foresight because Legendary hits it out of the park again, giving Del Toro as much freedom. All right? I wanted to see there's so much here I wish they would have expanded on. The mind-melding, it's even hard to explain because you don't want to give too much away. And I have the graphic novel. I knew the technology going in and seeing it on screen. I wanted that explored more because that's an interesting subject. I mean, how long did it take these actors to work together to get in sync? Because they look, while running the Mecca or the yogurt, they look perfectly in sync. I wanted more on the Chinese team because we saw the two-way. How does the three-way, the triplet thing work? I wanted to see how exactly does that work. And that mech had four arms. I wanted to see that. And here's something I guarantee you two guys didn't think about, but I know you've had to see it. If you watched the Robot Fighting League, Robot Combat League on Sci-Fi a couple months ago, that show hosted by Chris Yelko, where people were fighting with robots in the ring, like Rock-a-Sock-a robots. Some of these mecha look an awful lot like that. I wonder if there was a connection between the two shows. Because the Russian robot, the Russian robot, the Australian one, they look so much like that. Even the last kaiju looked like one of the robots of Robot Combat League. I wonder if there was something there. I wonder if that was right there to put in an implant into people's subconscious that, you know, we're used to this fighting thing. But, yo, the action scenes, I mean, we ripped apart some of the action scenes for Transformers and stuff. You know, here, think about this. Just think about this. Outside of Godzilla in these monster movies, there isn't very much about how the monsters learn after battles and everything like this. Here they do, people. And that is, they had some interesting things in this. And let's face it, Ron Perlman. You mind melding with what? Everybody get out of here. And I was wondering up until that scene why he was wearing the glasses. Folks, not to spoil that away, you got to see that scene because that's a great scene. Hey, Del Toro and Perlman are gold. And big up to Idris Elba and Charlie Hunnam. Charlie Hunnam, you usually haven't seen him without the beard, all right? Because if you've watched Sons of Anarchy, he's the lead actor. But he holds his way here. He did something here that Tyler Critch was supposed to do with John Carter and with Battleship. He made himself here into a bankable leading man for at least an action thing. I wonder what his next movie is going to be. But I have to echo the sentiments. Like it, hate it, you guys got to go see it. You guys got to go see it once. I've heard some of the complaints, and some of the complaints I can't really argue against. But this, like Captain said, this is a must-watch because, again, Del Toro, I have a problem with a lot of cliches, but like Hellboy 2, he takes those cliches and he makes it work for him. No arguments. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
All right, let's go to our loyal listeners. I see that Kavina Man is in the chat room, and he said he just got out of the film and did not like it. And then he says,
ooh,
it would have been better with Godzilla versus the alien monsters.
Not Godzilla.
I don't really agree with that because I want to see Mecha. Listen. Oh boy, how can I put this? I can appreciate anyone's opinion. But I don't see how you can discount what that movie looks like. I mean, these movies are getting so good at making fantasy films that do not look. And we have to remember what we were dealing with 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. This is a whole new ball of wax. When you look at this stuff, even the 3D was pretty immersive. That helped also. But to see these films, I will confess this. Well, first of all, let me say this first up. From my understanding, Man of Steel made its money on a secret tip in licensing alone. Before that movie was already in the black. I don't know if we ever mentioned this. Before Man of Steel was actually released, let's say the first, you know, 2 weeks before it was released, it already had $200 million garnered in licensing. So when that goes down, sometimes these movies have a secret black thing going on as far as money's concerned. I'm wondering if Guillermo's film, if Pacific Rim, has that same thing. Because I'm already thinking of I as an adult male will buy a mecha, definitely. If they have some kind of mecha or one of those creatures, I will buy that for just to have it. I can't say I'll take it out the box like a perfect nerd. I'm already on board with that. When I looked at that movie, I said, "Okay, wait a minute. They got to make money on licensing on that." Yeah, I wouldn't even accept that there's going to be a cartoon. I mean, there's no way you can't make money off of Pacific Rim, even if it does so at the box office. If you factor all the ancillary things attached to a movie with that looked so visually stunning,
they alluded to it in the film. They alluded to it in the film. There are newscasts in the film, and they show you commercials where they're selling Mecha and Kaiju because humans like the lemons we are, you know, we flock to that. Oh my God, that creature attacked the city. I want to buy it. You know, they had kids running around with little Kaiju and little Mecha dolls running around in the film, folks. You know, so I don't know if that's Del Toro's secret way of saying, hey, we could be marketed this way too. You know, but like I said, I've heard a lot of criticisms about the film. All right, but to me, this was no Battleship. To me, this was no Transformers: Dark Side of the Moon, all right? I'm telling you, this one was intelligently done, and I'm saying that with the problems I had with the film, you know? So, there you go, Apple Nerd.
Can I add something?
Yeah, certainly.
See, I have the tendency to be the most critical person here at times, you know, when it comes to the movies, you know? I would say that. That's a fair assessment. But, you know, the storyline and the cliche stuff is a problem. It would have been even a much huger problem if it was not as visually stunning. It was so visually stunning, it outweighed that. Because when we got, what was the whole deal with Transformers? You know why you have to go see Transformers? It wasn't so much, it's a kiddie storyline. That's what it was with kids. And I know a lot of the geeks would say, well, that's what it was. That's what it is. It, you know, it's the same thing, as a kid. Yeah, but sometimes, and a lot of times, it doesn't necessarily transfer onto the screen. What made Transformers 1 such a big deal You didn't see that. You were like, wow, these individuals look really real. It's a big deal. It was visually stunning. Matrix. You remember Matrix? You remember Matrix, guys? Of course, it was a good storyline. But what really made Matrix was when they got a hold of that new CGI that there wasn't at the given time, nobody didn't see that at the theatrical level. That's what made it so good. It was something that was not done before. You didn't see it unless you were an insider. So that's ultimately what we're dealing with here. This, to me, is next level. And if you look at the credits on some of the CGI team, you see a lot of those guys were involved with George Lucas's team. Interesting.
Ding.
That's all. That's all.
And Afro-Nerd, you also brought up a great point, okay? And, again, I'm not Asian. I am not Asian. I have a love for all of that stuff, as the guys know, all right? But to me, this was a great homage. And we'll see what the Asian markets think of it. I said last week, our opinions, they matter to us. They may matter to some of you. But for this movie, who would be the major deciding factor is the Asian markets. Because, let's say, the Kaiju and them, that's in their history. And I think Del Toro did a great job honoring it here. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, one last thing before we go to a quick nerdcore groove. I'm always going to bring in imagery. I'm always going to do that. I'm sorry, fellas, but I'm so desperate for it because we are surrounded by minstrels and court jesters. having seen Idris do his thing, and I like the way, and you've mentioned this before, Kath, about the open-mindedness and the progressive nature of Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo, he has a thing, and we love him for it. He has a thing about, I guess, oddball casting or progressive casting. Now, you know, normally with these films, we talked about this. We're going to have to open this up, too. Some of the films that came and went this summer, shouting out Tom Cruise. People, you know, the world is changing. The demographics are changing. And having the typical square-jawed Caucasian titular character or lead actor, it's just getting played. Everybody has to have a turn. You got to have the Latin guy, gentleman or lady, as a lead on occasion. You have to have the black female or black male, the Asian lead, Asian female. You got to have people in a multicultural cast now. You just have to. You can't do this with a black family, not just a black man, but I'm talking about a black family in the White House. You have Sonia Sotomayor, one of my heroes. She's on the Supreme Court. You got Eric Holder I forgot his title. Attorney General. You have to concede to what's happening in the world cinematically. So to have someone as strong, you know, I'm going to tell you, don't touch me. Don't touch me once. I'll tell you again, rule one, don't touch me. Rule two, don't touch me. He was a powerful, no bars held thing with Idris. You know, he was commanding. Yes, it's a sci-fi thing. But we need to see these strong characters, especially strong characters of color and even strong male characters of color to get away from the minstrels and the court jesters. So that alone, I gave prospect for him, giving him the control of the film. Idris was the man. And check out, we mentioned this before, check him out with the third season of Luther, courtesy of BBC America. That's it. More discourse, folks. Quick, speaking of, this is appropriate, obviously. Speaking of nerdcore, let's get into Kaiju. Crush, Kill, Destroy by Tribe One. We'll be right back. Hold on.
Attention, everyone. This is an emergency broadcast. The unpleasant noise you are about to hear coming from your radio is not a mistake. Please do not turn off your radio, but turn up the volume on your receiver as high as it can go. so that you can make the sound we broadcast as loud as possible.
Right on time, actually, the appropriately titled Kaiju Crush, Kill, Destroy by legendary nerdcore artist, nerdcore hip-hop artist, Tribe One. Folks, this is the comic shop. We got Hello?
No, this is not like that. Can you hear
what happened? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. This is not like that, that's all.
So getting back into the fold, folks, we got about 10 minutes remaining. This is the comic shop. We have Afternoon Radio coming up in a few moments. I want to talk about Fearless Defenders. Now, I must admit that I didn't get this series, but I must get it. And I'll tell you this much. I probably was biased against Fearless Defenders, and I think Daryl might know where I'm coming from, because there have been a number of Defenders books, but to me, the really quintessential Defenders books was part of the Bronze Age during the mid-70s. And visually, that book, Carol, for a kid, because I didn't start collecting books until really the early 80s, but I think, came out, that particular line came out, I think, in the mid-70s. The premise of the Defenders was so anti-Avengers. You're talking about a group of heroes that are essentially brought together as anti-heroes. So you had that original group, and they have never been able, and maybe Daryl might think differently, but to me, they've never been able to repeat that, either in art or just what it meant. But to visually see Doctor Strange, the Hulk, Ghost Rider, Submariner, I believe Damien, the son of Satan, was on that. I mean, they had all these characters that are really not even second-tier characters, mostly tertiary characters, but it just worked. And for some reason, I think the book's worth a little bit of money. So that's the quintessential Defenders book. And then you have Silver Surfer. See, those characters together as a team, so not the Avengers. That's just, something else is going on there. So just for someone growing up with that kind of book, which was the anti-Avengers, was something special. And they've never been able to in my estimation, to really replicate that magic. There have been other Defenders books. So I'm hearing more about this Fearless Defenders book, Fearless Defenders number 6, which is out. And this is comprised of female characters. Misty Stone? Is that the character's name?
Misty Knight.
Misty Knight. Misty Knight,
girlfriend of Iron Fist.
Right. With the bionic arm. She's also a 70s blaxploitation layover. From what I'm hearing about this book, I gotta get this series now. So maybe it might break the bias that I've had, being that it's not the Defenders I know. But there seems to be a growing controversy. I saw this from the Newsarama.com website, and there seems to be a beloved lesbian character, I guess a recent character, that has been a fan favorite, and all intents and purposes, I mean, no one really stays dead for long in comics, but it appears that they killed this character off, and people are beefing. The fan base are coming out. And all I could say was, okay, one, I'm going to get this series, and two, welcome to the club. Anytime they have disenfranchised groups, minority characters, what have you, that are far and few between, they get rid of them. And you know, I don't know. I hate to say I don't know why. I guess I know why. It's just disheartening. Now I think Daryl has a different take on this. But all I can say is that for those folks that are smarting because of the loss of this character, and again, very few people stay dead in comics, welcome to the club. This is what they do. What are your thoughts, Daryl?
All right, firstly, Fearless Defenders spun out of possibly the best thing that came out of the Fear Itself event, which was a 12-issue maxi series called The Fearless, which involved Valkyrie, who's the star of this book, searching around from the Norse hammers that were used to terrorize the world. All right. So at the end of the Fearless, her fellow Valkyrie are entrusted with the hammers and they fly away. So now Valkyrie's entrusted with finding new Shield Maiden, aka Valkyries, amongst Earth's populace. All right, which means she's looking for female heroes, which means this is a female hero-dominated book, which means when the issue prior hints that someone's got to die for the curse to be released, you know, that means a female hero is going to die. This is why I didn't get worked up with this, because I followed this series from the beginning, and there's three core characters. All right, in this book, Valkyrie, Misty Knight, and this archaeologist, Annabelle Gish. They're the only ones that have been in each and every issue. All right, so what does that mean to me? One of those three have to die. All right, what does that also mean? Hey, Misty Knight's not going to die. And I will tell you the main reason why. She's a borrowed character. She's going to be heavily involved in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's going to be heavily involved in upcoming Avengers books, Mighty. She's going to be involved in that, so they can't kill her off. It's Valkyrie's book. They're not going to kill her off. So guess who that leaves? So, folks, if you know anything about comics, none of the guest stars are going to die, because in this latest book, you have She-Hulk, you have The Wasp, you have or a visible woman. You have all these female heroes from Marvel helping them out. They're not going to kill a borrowed character off because it'll be sensationalist, A, and B, you know, you're borrowing the character. You can't borrow a character and kill them off in your book instead of theirs. So, you know, this death was foretold. That's all I'm saying. All right? Folks, you're upset. And guess what? The writer did his job. Colin Bunn is a rising star in the industry. Why? He got you to care about this character through 5 issues so that in the 6th issue, when he bumps the character off, you're pissed. Listen,
sorry.
I was a Runaways fan. Same thing. Go ahead, Alpha Nerd.
Okay, because we only have about 3 minutes remaining. I want to just fit this in real quick. Well, you know, again, I hear what you're saying. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think that we've got to make concerted efforts to maintain minority disenfranchised folk representation. Listen, folks know I have a conservative bent. I don't profess to understand gay culture, but I do think that it should be, like anything else, be represented in comics because it's a reflective of what's happening in reality. So I will say that just as you have to have Latina characters and Asian characters, gay characters, instead of making people gay, shouting out to Andrew Garfield, who wants to make, he joked about making Spider-Man gay. You know what? Just come up with a new gay character, for Christ's sake, instead of trying to make someone gay. That's just my own thing. It's goofy to make everybody gay. Anyway, just create a new character. That's more respectful than just, you know, at the flip of a switch. That's disrespectful, I think. Quickly, we've got 2 minutes. What about this meeting with Vin Diesel and Marvel? He's being very coy. He met with Marvel Entertainment, and he has a picture on his Facebook of him in front of Avengers number 2, the comic book. And then he used the term tunnel vision. What are your thoughts, Daryl? We got about less than 2 minutes.
Well, us Agent Coulson as Vision fans are a little disappointed. Hey, if he's going to be the Vision, hey, that means you don't get the one-liners, man. That's what it means to me. All this was a meeting. We'll see what happens. Back to you.
All right. Any thoughts, Captain, before we move along next door?
You can pretty much get anybody to play Vision from the theatrical standpoint. So if he's going to put people in the seats, you bring them in. That's all.
He's a good voiceover actor also. Iron Giant comes to mind. So he has a really deep, resonating voice. So we don't know. He could be Thanos for all we know. But I suspect he was being very coy with that picture in front of Avengers number 2, the comic book, and then using the term, I have tunnel vision sometimes. All right, Vin. I see you. Gentlemen, it's been real. We have a lot to unpack next week. So say we all. Daryl, as always, appreciate the support. Next week, now, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Let's get to it. Thanks, folks. We're going next door.
Enjoy.
Now.
Enjoy.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Crazy.
My house got robbed in New York. I didn't even call the police. I wanted to, but I couldn't. My crib is too nice. It's not that it's too nice, but it's too nice for me. You know how the police are in New York. Soon as I open the door, they'll be like, oh, he's still here. Open and shut case, Johnson. Apparently, this black guy broke in and hung up pictures of his family everywhere. Never seen anything like it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerve Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerve.
Good evening, folks. This is the second act. Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Feel free to come on in. The water is warm. Give us your questions, your protestations, your disagreements, what have you. We can take it. Let's get to a quick Nerdcore groove, folks. Nerdcore groove. I'm still stuck in comic shop mode. Pardon me. A quick urban alternative groove. It's all the same stuff, but still, urban alternative. And then we will have to talk about, undoubtedly, the Trayvon Martin trial as it appears to be coming to a close. We've been talking about this thing from here and there. I will say I don't think I'm as emotionally as invested as others are for varied reasons. I feel, of course, disheartened that a young man left this earth before his time, but it's a lot of young men and young women leaving this earth that we're not talking about, but we'll talk about it. First up, Urban Alternative Groove. This is new from Yasiin Bey, a.k.a. formerly Mos Def, Revelations from the Preservation CD. We'll be right back, folks, and again, let's groove.
Revelations.
Don't stop. Keep on. Sunshine.
Black gold, standing in the sun, getting black as I want. They playing good, then that ain't backing me up. Skywalker, baby, ain't no jag in my hem. I got a whole lot to say, so I ain't talking to them. I hear him eavesdropping and turn it up louder. Black freedom, black genius, black power. Black ink, printing the black dollar. And tell us CIA, I say, now what? And CC a central bank. Loose change, body slamming, big money tanks. We tell God thanks. Y'all telling us that God don't rank. That's why your breath stinks. Lay off the bacon and the smokes. And quit laying off the good working folks. Quit the hoax. And lay off the corny color jokes. Corn chili to pop, yelly the colors is a woke. You big dope. Keep them out your face, keep them in your prayers. Either that or keep them in the crosshairs. Better still keep an even dose of each, cause until you get justice, you won't get peace, 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 peace. The gunshot is lit. Wa-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-da-da-da-day. Ay, they shout peace, 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 peace. They shout peace, 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 peace. The firefight licks. Wa-da-da-day, wa-da-da-da-day,
Rumors and rumors and rumors of war. That I get dead and I don't know what they're dead for.
And more.
Rumors and rumors and rumors of war. Killers just killing, I don't know what they kill for. Rumors and rumors of war. That I get dead and I don't know what they're dead for.
And more.
Rumors and rumors and rumors of war.
Revelation.
All right, folks, you know what we do. We always give you the best of urban alternative music. That is new from the artist formerly known as Mos Def, Yasiin Bey, Revelations. Folks, this is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Grindhouse Edition, the second half, and it's going to be a powerful one. But first, there is the Captain. Captain, your time is now. Let's get to it.
Please excuse me, sir, Afro Nerd. I was looking at the time, and I totally zoned out. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, boy. Let's get started, sir. Let's go.
Yeah, you know, listen, this is a very important weekend because the media are telling us so. That is important. And I don't want to really disparage the Trayvon Martin trial or maybe the I should say State of Florida versus Zimmerman, George Zimmerman. That's really the trial. This young man, he's got problems. And young Master Martin, he's no longer with us. And it's a difficult case in some respects. I think the main concern is that some folks are reporting that if this trial does not go the way that many, not all, but that many in the black community would prefer for it to go, that riots could occur. And for those who are listening, I implore you, I'm sure the Catholic implores you, do not act like they think you will act. Stop confirming stereotypes. This is the anti-stereotype show. If it doesn't go down the way you think it should go down, try again. There's always the appeal process. And not only that, if we're going to be honest, it looks like the prosecution just did not put on a great case. The star witness, folks want to make excuses for Ms. Gentile, Rachel Gentile. They want to make excuses. We saw the lower tier set, the hip hop community, tweeting out support for this young lady. Listen, I understand she's 19, but her friend did die. Her friend's parents are there looking for justice, and she did not represent. Don't encourage her. Don't high five failure by saying, we got your back, everything's okay, you did good. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Hopefully, perhaps, the prosecution will still prevail. But we don't know. We don't know. This is a difficult case. It is. It is a difficult case. One thing that I thought that was very interesting, during the trial, they played back the police interview with Mr. Zimmerman. And he admitted, after questioning, they asked him straight up, did you identify yourself as part of the neighborhood watch? And he said, no. I said this before. I didn't see a uniform on Mr. Zimmerman's, on his person. No uniform. There's no way for young Master Martin to know who he was. If you're going to pretend to be a cop, then wear pretend cop clothing. Identify who you are. Say, hey, excuse me, I'm part of the neighborhood watch. Can you tell me, you know, where you're going? Now, some folks, they didn't like the profiling process. They don't like that. They don't believe that there should be a profile or that there is such a thing as a profile. Sorry, there is a profile. And some in the black community, as I said in the last show, they know it's a profile, especially when it comes to Muslim folks, statistically. After 9/11, black folks were number one for saying, oh, yeah, we have to profile those people. When it's our turn, what's a profile? That is being disingenuous, and I'm not trying to be snarky. That's just the facts. However, there were eight break-ins by young black males in that gated community. So I think a certain degree of discernment, a certain degree of questioning was par for the course. However, his approach stunk. His approach stunk. After he was advised, see, everything's getting into legalese now, ladies and gentlemen. He wasn't told to stay in the car. He was advised, we don't really need you to do that. That's not really a directive. That's very quasi. Very quasi. He wasn't really given a directive. However, bottom line is, if he had approached Master Martin in a certain way, if he had done that, this would have been another day, would have been another night. Because at the core component here, no one's really talking about that. Talk about this, and I want the captain to weigh in, is that Martin belonged in that complex. Now, we could really be metaphysical and esoteric and say, well, as a black person, I can walk wherever I want to walk. That's true. You can. You can. But on the real, this young man's father was staying in the complex. He had a right to be there. Everyone forgets that they're trying to criminalize him and all that kind of thing. And I have my issues with how some of our young black and brown folk appear. It's not a mystery. I have a problem with our appearance. But beyond that, the core issue is he belonged there. If there was an ability to have a conversation and not an altercation, if there was time for a conversation, this would have been over and done with. So there's got to be some recklessness, a great deal of recklessness on the part of Zimmerman. That's it. Keep calm, however this turns out. But I certainly would not riot off of a case that really is incumbent upon the prosecution's ability to put on a good case, to provide a story. The prosecution has to provide a plausible story. And throughout this whole trial, we still really do not know what transpired between George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. What was that altercation? He got out the car, there was an altercation, and then there was a young man dead. Many in the black community want to skip from him getting out the car, the Skittles, the cherubic face, which is 5 years out of date, and the iced tea. We want to put that in the mix. We want to skip from him getting out the car and him killing him. Something happened in between. We just don't know what. Captain, your thoughts.
Well, when you're dealing with a situation with this, there's actually three stories. There's three stories going on. You have Zimmerman's story. Then you have Trayvon's story. Trayvon is not here, so that's a big problem. But let's say their story, the parties that's there for Trayvon Martin. Then you have something known as the truth. And the truth is very difficult, very hard to get at in this case. There isn't any video. Even the witnesses say, well, I heard this. This person was on top, and then I saw this. It's fragmentated. So you're still left to assume at that given point. So it makes it very difficult. There's always three stories. Always remember that. Three stories. And what you want to do is be able to get to the truth, or the closest to the truth as possible. Now, there's something AfroNerd said the best. What was supposed to happen here was, as they say, the terminology, two ships passing in the night. Let me repeat that. Two ships passing in the night. Didn't happen. In order for two ships to pass in the night, it's not one person reasoning. That's where people make mistakes. You need two people reasoning. You know what happens if one person is just reasoning and the other person is not? You can get punched in the face. You can get shot. You can get killed. So anytime, I would think most of you drive. You're driving in an intersection, and then there's a crash. Now, if the both parties cannot reason, it can escalate to fisticuffs. It can even escalate even further. How did that happen? You see? But if both parties within the crash, because accidents do happen, start to reason, you change insurance, driver's license, police come, and everything else. That's why you have insurance on your car, your vehicles, because accidents will happen. You're all right. But it takes two people to reason. And there's also something called preconceived reasoning. It happens before. All right? It happens before everything. When you're dealing with Zimmerman, just as the great Afro Nerd said, where was your neighborhood watch, hat, jacket? Your vehicle should have been wrapped. All that adds with the early reasoning before the encounter actually happens. And also, Trayvon Martin might have been, based on what we're hearing and things like, he might have been a little bit thuggy. So you put that together. It's a bad mix. Now, does this mean that he should lose his life? No, absolutely not. But I'm just saying, this is why you need to have two people reasoning. Then it would have just been two ships passing in the night. Now, going into this trial, I said there's no way they're going to get a murder charge. I think they can get a manslaughter charge. And that's pretty much how they should have prepared from the get-go. That's just my opinion. But I'm not a lawyer. I don't do a bunch of court cases on a regular basis. That's just me using my common sense going in. It's a very tragic situation. And as the great Afro Nerd said many times on this show when this started, this was supposed to be two ships just passing in the night. But to add as a caveat, in order for two ships to pass in the night, two people have to be reasoning. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I want to say something else briefly, and I'm all about being honest. I see we have a caller. Caller, hold on just a few more moments. We'll get to you in just a second. I want to unpack something further for our audience because I'm all about honesty about how I really feel. I have my blackout moments, like the great Dr. William H. Cosby had his blackout moments. I believe he's going back on stand-up, Captain.
Yes, he is.
After 30
yes.
years or something, he's going back. So that should be interesting. Anyway, I'm all about honesty. I'm all about, and the captain as well, looking at things through a certain prism. I'm all about high cognition and thinking. There's even a book out. I'm sorry I can't recollect the name of the book, but there's a book about the tools for thinking. Next time I'll come with the information, but there's a book out now specifically about the topic of thinking. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen, that there's a topic on how to think. Now, what is Afro-Nerd talking about? We have too many dumb blacks, Captain. I'm going to be honest with you. Too many dumb people.
Whoa.
But I'm talking tribal now. One of my first interviews was with Larry Elder, who some folks probably do not like because he's a black conservative, and he had a book called Stupid Black Men, which was a parody or a send-up off of Michael Moore's Stupid White Men. He had difficulty getting acknowledgement on the book or difficulty really getting interviews for this book. You can go into the archives, actually. It's a good interview, great interview. Myself, Mr. Starks, of course, the captain's predecessor, and Larry Elder, Stupid Black Men. And the thing of it is, the irony of it is that you could have a book entitled Stupid White Men that will sell quite well. You can get interviews because no one really believes white men are stupid. Listen to what I'm saying. Unfortunately, And I've met my fair share of stupid white men, fair share of stupid people, okay? But as far as a meme goes, and we're all about memes here, as far as a meme goes, no one believes that, as far as that insulting kind of thing. That's why he was able to get away with a book called Stupid White Men. Now, Larry Elder has a book called Stupid Black Men, where he unpacks on black males and the meme of the non-thinking black male. Could not really get a whole lot of run on that book because people get into this politically correct stance, and they get into this thing, well, it's a victimization kind of thing. Well, we don't want to offend anyone. That's not really what it's about. What's really going on is, well, we kind of sort of think in a certain way about black men, so we don't want to double up on that. What is more insulting? You know, there's a thing, probably the only thing that came out of the Bush administration, Captain, was the adage, the bigotry of low expectations. Now, what am I getting into, all these meanderings? The reason for this show, not only is it about honesty, but it's about really putting a line in the sand to cut the nonsense, cut the court jesting that we see, the minstrelsy, the coonery, cut that out, and let's get back into black cognition, black genius, black thinking. You know, no one ever thinks about, you know, black, I'm speaking generally, black men in parks, especially in New York, have a preternatural and innate ability to play speed chess. All you'll see, and Captain knows this, you'll see a lot of black older men playing speed chess. We spoke about, I think, sometime last year, the two youngest chess masters were two black males. We're talking about all this high cognitive abilities, all the scientific abilities that are coming out of Africa, Nigeria specifically. There are pockets of black genius that we talk about incessantly during our blue area segments of this show. So I'm not saying all black men are stupid. I'm not saying every black male. So I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is there's a meme of black male stupidity, a meme that black men and black people, that we're not thinking people. That meme has to stop. It has to stop. There are many young black males like Trayvon that we try to highlight, that the world does not know about, that would not have ended up like Trayvon under similar circumstances. See, we're too fearful of saying, Captain. There's a statistic out that says that the higher the educational level for black people, especially black men, the higher the years of living are. You live longer based on your cognitive abilities. You live longer based on college educated blacks live longer. The underclass blacks. We could talk about nutrition. We could talk about educational opportunities and all that kind of thing. But a lot of it has to do with not only with
one exception to that. There's only one exception. The men in prison. They live the longest. That's
well,
the thing with that.
They're in Mylar plastic.
Yes.
Like the compost I collect.
Yeah.
And that's a frightening statistic as well. They're living longer because they're forced to eat. They're forced to eat well, they're forced to exercise, but they're in prison.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is we've got to teach our black young men and women to think, to reason. Because if Trayvon was really, if he thought in his mind that he was really in danger like he said he was, he had a phone. He could have told his girl, call the police, or I will call the police. And after having done that, if he had said to Zimmerman, hey, buddy, I got the police on the horn right now. I don't want any trouble. That's a thinking black person. He had a phone. Now, if he's a street kid, now people will tell you, well, street people don't think that way. Maybe they should. Chess teaches you, the beauty of chess, ladies and gentlemen, it gives you the ability to think ahead. If your intent is to best your opponent, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 10 steps ahead of your opponent is the basis of chess. Chess is life. The captain and I, we are always thinking. I can't stop thinking. My life is, I conduct my life always thinking about the next day or the next minute. I'm always thinking of the next move. Always. And when I walk in the streets, I'm a young black male, or relatively young, let's put it that way. Black male like everyone else in the streets of Manhattan, in the streets of New York. I'm not an idiot. I know I'm a black male in New York, but I am a thinking black male. The Oracle, a mature man of status and wisdom, did not get to be mature by being a dummy. Doesn't happen. Your young people will tell you, ah, you're dumb old man, you're dumb. You know, if you're past 30, you're old in this world now, Captain. You know, this is Logan's Run's nightmare, right? But you don't get to be the young fools aren't making it past 18 or 20 or 25. That's not high cognition. I'm sorry. It's not. We got to start telling these young people the truth, Captain. We've got to start to tell these young people how to think. And one thing that Stark, I want you to weigh in. We're going to go to the phones, though. One thing that Stark says, Mr. Stark, your predecessor, from the honor guard of this show, he says he loves, and I say this is behind the scenes now, he loves to outthink Whitey. That's how he puts it, not to be disparaging toward people listening. That's what he says colloquially, meaning he likes to dispel what people think of him. And he treats it like a game. We've done it together. We've been in situations where we had to outthink, quote unquote, the man. And we've been able to do it rather successfully. Because they think you're a dummy. Because the meme is you're a dummy. Let's start to really, after this Trayvon Martin situation, folks, tell these young people to think several steps ahead. And you will survive. Not everybody is getting killed in the streets like this. Some of it is due to the inability to think. Some of it, not all of it, some of it. That's it. It's enough for my soapbox moment. Let's go to the phones. Open them up. We're going to talk about this Trayvon thing for a moment. Then we're going to move along. 301.
Yes, hello, Afro Nerd and Captain Kirk. This is
hey.
Black Achievement. Yeah, good to hear you.
As always.
Yes. Let me say this, because you said something that really got to the crux of the matter, and I understood what you said, but I just have a different take. You stated that Trayvon belonged there. He belonged in the retreat at, I think, Twin Lakes, whatever they call it. I understand what you meant. You know, of course, he resided there, he lived there, he was visiting or whatever, but he didn't belong there. You can't tell me, based on that ho-hum investigation that the Sanford Police Department did, that he belonged in that community. If he belonged there, then he would have been identified that night. They would have knocked on doors. Did anyone know a black kid that lives here? Can anyone... You know, is there a black family that lives here, or have you seen this kid? Even when they came back the next day with Zimmerman, they still had not identified Trayvon Martin's body. He stayed in the morgue for 3 days under John Doe. So to suggest that he belonged there, I don't know. Even watching the trial, all the people who lived in the community there, they all came out saying, for the most part, they're parade of witnesses. That's Zimmerman. And the attorney, the prosecutor said, well, have you ever heard Zimmerman scream for help? No. Well, how do you know it's him? Well, I know that's Georgie. You know, Trayvon didn't have any, what I would say, character witnesses. Anyone who said he was a good guy, and no one that lived in that community, definitely. Only person I can say that Trayvon had for him was his mama. Somebody else, you know, Rachel, as you say, I don't want to, belabor that, but Rachel Chantel was horrible. Horrible. As a matter of fact, the prosecution didn't waste no time with her. They didn't even prep her. They didn't even talk to her about how the criminal justice system works. She was as ignorant as they on that stand. And how you going to win a case of second-degree murder when your star witness, you said in closing, is not sophisticated? Could you have said that of any of the other 50-plus witnesses, D-Burt? Could you have said any of the other 50 people came up there were not sophisticated? What does that mean? I mean, don't believe her. So you're not going to get second-degree murder. I mean, let me end there, D-Burt. I'm going. I know you want to get off this topic. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
So hold on for a minute, B.A. Hold on. Listen, you know how we go back, and you've been a long supporter of this show, and I hope you continue listening to the show. And I don't disagree with what you said. I agree with everything you said. But what I meant about him belonging to it, I meant that as a technicality, meaning that his father was staying in that complex, and if there was a conversation. Now, we understand being black and being outsiders, and we could talk about him having kind of ghetto cred, and, you know, he's visiting. But as far as if there was time for a discussion, if there were level heads, if there was one person out of the two that had some degree of some modicum of cognitive reasoning, this would have been done and over with. Zimmerman was, you could tell Zimmerman felt like, okay, these black kids, he got tribal. These black kids are rifling through our community. I'm sick of it. And to be honest with you, I can kind of appreciate that sentiment somewhat, but you still have to have discernment. He took the whole umbrella approach and said he didn't look at him any different, and unfortunately our youth are not being trained to be distinct. You know, you heard me talking to Joe Madison and his daughter. They don't believe that there's a profile, so we continue on this sick carousel ride. We continue on this carousel ride. Black folks are dying like the trailer in World War Z. Black bodies are toppling over each other. We don't have the emotional concern for the folks that are dying by the hundreds in Chirac, in Chiganistan. That's what Chicago is being called now. We don't care about that, all right? We care about this white man, who isn't white, incidentally. He's a brown man. But we have to stick with the narrative. That's another thing. So that's all about honesty. That's all about honesty, B.A., here. We don't take shorts here. Aaron Hernandez allegedly killed a black man too. No one says anything because A, he's quote unquote down. He's a brown man. He's a thug, and we know who and what he is. We didn't know what Zimmerman looked like. All we heard was a man called Zimmerman killed a black boy. Once we saw him, we were already stuck on that narrative because normally, if it's black on black or black on brown or some kind of minority involvement, it kind of washes away. And we know why. There's a kind of equivalency there. It's almost like he's black by proxy, right? But his name was Zimmerman. We're stuck with that narrative. We saw brothers buying, and I'm being tribal, we saw brothers buying T-shirts with a brown man that says we got to get the cracker. It's laughable. You got a T-shirt that has Pedro on the cover, Pedro on the chest, but you call him a cracker. Unbelievable. So we're dishonest also. We're dishonest. But I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree with it. But I'm saying as a technical legal thing, Trayvon, if he had the opportunity, he could have, if he had the chance, he could have said, hey, man, my father is staying up the block. I'm up the block. There wasn't a conversation. There was an altercation. Zimmerman wasn't that bright. And Trayvon is 17 and ghetto. He wasn't that bright either. And that's the core component, B.A., is we've got to talk honestly about what's happening with our youth, and we have to impart the notion of being able to think. If someone was thinking, listen, you know how many black, I know plenty of black 17-year-old kids that have high cognitive reasoning, aside from accidents, aside from being collateral damage in Negro nonsense, because that's, I mean, in true innocence. But there's an altercation. The altercation led to the death. Someone thinking that altercation might not have ever occurred. Trayvon, you know, hey, there's a street mentality. We saw his girl. His girl could not even comport herself in a court of law, and you have lower tier black folk coming to her assistance saying, "We got your back, sis," and now we're supposed to riot off of a shaky case. We're going to riot off of her poor performance. If that happens, it is over. It is over. You can't riot, really you can't riot for a lot of reasons, but you can't riot off of the performance of a Rachel Jonteel coming in with ghetto-centric mannerisms and all that, and folks are talking about we need to get an interpreter. It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. That's all. That's all.
And let me just say this in response to some in the chat room. This case is more complex than what we can imagine. There's a lot of internal fighting going on between the special prosecutor, Angela Curry, and the police department in San Fran and the DA's office in Seminole County. They're fighting, a lot of fighting going on behind the scenes, because the truth of the matter is this case was closed. It was a done deal, okay, the night that it happened. The DA said he was not going to pursue manslaughter charges. He believed Zimmerman's self-defense. The police department all said that they believed him. They said he was a credible witness. They said he was remorseful, and that was a done deal. And the special prosecutor came in, didn't have any independent investigation done, just used the Sanford DA, brought them on the stand, and they all turned against the prosecution. This was a strange and wacky case. Never in history has there ever been how often is there a conviction when the police department said the defendant is a good guy? We like him. Come on. Thanks, D-Bird. Thank you.
Thank you, B.A., as always, man. Thank you very much. We're going to go to another call. And you know something else, Captain? I think I might have hinted at this before. You know, this case was never supposed to make it to trial.
Yes, that's correct.
We have to remember that the police had already shut this case down. It was because of political machinations by the black community, rightfully or wrongfully. Let me repeat that. Rightfully or wrongfully, that made this case, that made folks take a look. And I think an investigation should have been done to treat this black boy's body so nonchalantly. But then, you know, listen, it's par for the course. You know, black folks are going to have to become more self-effacing, more critical, really more self-analyzing, because our inability to become emotional over the inner city crime, that the statistics are above the roof. The stats on inner city crime of black deaths in Chicago, in Camden, New Jersey, in Oakland, in St. Louis, in Miami, in Brownsville, Brooklyn, in East New York, Brooklyn, they're so crazy. The percentages are off the chain, and we don't seem to take the same degree of emotional intent with those cases. But once a white man, and in this case, white by proxy because he's not white, but we have to stick with the narrative, and I defy someone to defy what I just said. I look at this man, this man has a profile himself. When I first saw his picture, he could have been part of the Mexican mafia because he's a brown man. But because we got stuck on his surname, we got stuck because we didn't see him. Now, you know, we're going to make a brown man, we have to make a brown man into a white man. That's offensive to me on some level. And then we see black and brown shenanigans with violence, shouting out Aaron Hernandez, allegedly. And you know, here are people in the black community, they don't care about that. They don't care about that because he's part of the black order. And what's the black order? It means there are people that are under the black umbrella. We know that. Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Costa Ricans, we know who they are and what they are. So we know inherently, we're going to, it's black, we have black and brown coalitions. You know, we they're neighbors, we live together. Fat Joe says the N-word, just like other people of color, as if they have Tourette's. He's been doing it for 20 years without controversy. Why? He'll tell you why. Because I was in the projects. Jaquan was my neighbor. He didn't have a pot to piss in like I didn't have a pot to piss in. No one says anything. And everybody knows why they don't say anything. But the narrative was already against Zimmerman as opposed to Rodriguez. If it was Rodriguez, we would not have gone this route. But we got stuck in the narrative. That's it. Let's go to the 312, Captain, and then you know, we'll go on to something else. 312, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
This is Kim Success in Chicago. Chirac, I think that's what you called it.
Yep, Chirac. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean, 5 a day, 10 a day, on the weekend, 15. I mean, it's just they just dropping like flies. And, you know, nobody is saying anything. And what I love the city of Chicago, but what I don't like about the city of Chicago, you have Mr. Farrakhan, you have Jesse Jackson, you have Oprah Winfrey, and nothing can be done for this city. That doesn't make sense. If you can't do it in your own city, how about you hop up out of Florida? You can't even do it for your own city, the people you know, the people you were in, right? And I've been thinking that and saying that for years because I was back in Chicago back in the 90s. Early 90s, 89, 90, and, you know, coming from Louisiana, oh, wow, I'm going to see the Nation of Islam. Oh, wow, I'm going to see Operation Push. Oh, wow, I'm going to see Oprah Winfrey. Why? It's nothing. You can't do nothing. This should be Chocolate City from all you have coming out of here. Obama. I still can't figure out what he was doing here. I see a few pictures. I can't figure out what he was doing here. Did you see the crime rate going down during his quote-unquote community coalition time? No. But I just wanted to state about how Trayvon Martin's body stayed in the morgue because nobody knocked on doors. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that because when the neighborhood was burglarized before, it was residents that were doing it, you know, boys that lived in the complex. So that's really, I'm thinking maybe they thought, okay, this is one of the guys that burglarized, and we don't need to go ask anybody who they are. But that's really interesting. They didn't go door to door to see who the young man was. I mean, be it him a criminal or whatever, you know, based on the other criminals that were in the neighborhood. And the last thing I want to say is we were talking in the chat room that, you know, Trayvon is dead because we have failed. We have attached ourselves to these lower-tier characteristics, and I like that lower-tier characteristics. So when our children walk the street that are not lower-tier, that we're, you know, as parents and community people and trying to do the best thing for our children, they're getting swept up in the majority of what we're letting allow. And, you know, it's like we're going to have to get back to pulling coattails of our neighbors and our cousins and our nephews and stuff because they're getting everybody else killed. And that's not right. And that's all I want to say over the phone. I'll get back to the chat room.
Thank you, Kim. I couldn't have said it any better than that. I mean, you really were on point, and what you're saying is correct. And I know folks are going to have a difficult time really listening to what we're talking about. And it's not about being a sellout. They'll claim that. Anytime you bring up the other side of the issue, which is only meant to save lives. I don't want to talk about this stuff, but it is a glaring inconsistency on our part. The world is watching, and it's looking very clear that, first of all, we're only motivated when it's a white person involved in some kind of death with a black person. If it has a racial involvement in it, then we're motivated. If it's not racial, then we could care less. We sit back and we scratch our heads, and we don't know what to do. We don't know what to do when it comes down to what's happening, like you said, in Chicago. But we do know what to do if a white man pulled the trigger. We know exactly what to do. I'm sorry, Kim. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the other thing I want to add, too, is, you know, everybody's tooting in 2040 or probably before that, it'll be majority-minority. Then what are we going to do? Because all we want to do is blame the white cracker. What are we going to do at 2040? If we don't get it together like we're saying that we need to do right now today, what are we going to do in 2040?
We're going to be a subclass. We're going to be substandard. We're going to be, as I see hints of it now, where no one's paying attention to black people. No one's. Matter of fact, I didn't mention this. There's a goofy thing happening now. There's some kind of gathering that's occurring, I believe, sometime this month or next month in Manhattan. Blacks for Paula Deen. Black people for Paula Deen. There's going to be a gathering of black people that want to support Paula Deen. I mean, we can't be disrespected anymore. We can't be. We've gone through so much disrespect that now when it's in your face, you still don't know how to react anymore. Everything gets a pass. I'm not even talking about the fact that she used the N-word. It's worse than Stockholm Syndrome. There's a group coming out now. You can look this up, ladies and gentlemen. Black People for Paula Deen. They're coming out in Manhattan in Times Square. There's a whole campaign around this. You have a campaign with black folks coming to her assistance after she disrespected you. And I'm not even talking about the N-word. The N-word is the least of it. A white woman was the woman that actually initiated this lawsuit. She did not like the disrespect that was going on in the business of Paula Deen and her brother. She was looking out for the black folks. Now we have black folks that say, we don't mind, you know, we don't, she's misunderstood. She's a woman from the South. Really? Really? I mean, we have pride anymore. We have no pride. No one else. Jewish people are not going to, if there was some other, they're not going to have any, did you see any Jewish people coming out in Mel Gibson's defense? Jewish people for Mel Gibson is never going to happen. But black folks, we are damaged, man. Severely damaged. All right, Kim, we're going to go to a musical break. As always, we appreciate the support. Continue listening. As always. All right, folks, there's more. We got about 11 minutes remaining. Let's go to let's go to a quick urban alternative groove. This is Exile, In Love. In Love by Exile. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Let's groove.
Love. Let's say it again. Love. Love. Let's say it again.
Love.
Love. Let's say it again. Love. Love.
right, folks, give you the best of urban alternative groove, black rock, you know it, Afropunk, coming up next month, actually. I'll give you a report on that. I can't wait for Afropunk. Anyway, there's still a lot to discuss. We only got about 7 minutes remaining, another call as well. I think I know who that is. We'll get to that call in a moment. I just want to read this thing on Black People for Paula Deen. I mean, once you read, I want to read just a little bit of this thing to show you how deep the madness goes. I mean, this is insanity. Again, I don't recollect there being Jewish folk for Mel Gibson. No such thing. We're sorry, man. This is some sorry, well, you know. It says here, this is from, I guess, a blogger from News Term. Yeah, News Term Blogspot, Black People for Paula. If you just simply put Black People for Paula, Google that. But it says here from the blogger, myself and over 100 of my friends are gathering in New York City on Friday, August 16th, 2013, to have a We Forgive You Paula rally in Times Square right outside of the Good Morning America studio during the 7 a.m. filming hour. We want everyone to see that the black people are for Paula and that we accept her apology. Black leaders such as the Reverend Jesse Jackson and the Reverend Al Sharpton have forgiven Paula. The black community has forgiven Paula. It's time for us to all open our hearts and give this good woman a second chance. The black community is with you, Paula, and we are going to let the world know. Oh, boy. Captain, man.
That's insane.
This makes our work even harder.
That's insane.
I mean,
insane.
How are we going to deal with these minstrels and these court jesters and these high school non-talent show acts? How are we going to deal with those people when we have people that are supporting people that want to go back to the antebellum South? It was deeper than her. Listen. I will support her using the N-word if she was really being robbed and a lower-tier black person puts a gun to her temple. Hell, I would have been the first to say that word myself under those circumstances. But it goes deeper than that. She talked about setting up a wedding reception, likening it to something you would have seen in Django. There's a whole bunch of things about how she thought. And I'm sorry, 66? Not that old. Not that old. In 1992, she was 46. So, I mean, how are we going to, you know, come on. 85, 90? Maybe. 60-something? No. No. So what are your thoughts on this, Cal? I mean, this is crazy.
Insane. That's it. One word. That's all.
All right, let's open up the lines. I wanted to talk about Jason Whitlock. I'm a fan of Jason Whitlock. He's a noted Fox sports columnist, sports analyst, and he came in hard on Jay-Z, Sean Carter's foray into sports management. He says, and I quote, "Why are we letting someone who makes nigga music, a sports manager or sports recruiter. He goes in deep, and we're all, just like Paula Deen, we have excuses for minstrels also. Everybody just has a forgiveness party. Time to forgive everybody. All right. Let's go to another 3-1, to another Chicagoan, another Chirackian, or Chiganiston. 312. Is this Serge?
Yeah. Chirac. Yeah,
The same.
No, well, look, as I said before, people who don't live in Chicago don't realize that what we're talking, when you see all these stories, and if you go by the addresses, and you live here in town, we're talking really about four neighborhoods out of about 200. We're talking about four neighborhoods. You know, that are actually, of the four neighborhoods, maybe three of them are out of the way. You can spend your entire life in Chicago and not even go near any of these neighborhoods, like Inglewood or Roselawn or Roseland or Austin. I mean, they're out of the way, right? So it's not a whole we're talking about a few concentrated areas. I thought you were going to talk about Fruitvale Station.
Yeah.
And,
you know what? We got less than 3 minutes, unfortunately. We're going to have to do it on Wednesday.
Well, can we
talk
about maybe Wednesday? Can we do it Wednesday? Because, you know,
exactly.
Like I said, I saw the film a couple weeks ago, and I did talk to the director. You see my interview in Shadow and Act. And I do agree with what you say, though, on the website. It is sort of like Black Misery. I just had a long talk with a friend of mine last night about the movie. You know, basically, there are three types of black films. There are films for everybody. There are black films for black people, say like Daughters of the Dust. And then there are black films for white people, like Fruitvale Station, like Precious. They're really for white people. You know, so white people can look at it and go like, gosh, now I know what it's like being black now that I've seen this movie. No, you don't.
And you know what?
I've read the New York... Okay, we run out of time. Too bad.
Yeah,
right.
More calls are coming in, and we got about a minute. So for the callers, for the listeners, listen, Wednesday, 7 p.m., we will reconvene. We'll get back at this stuff, but we got to talk about Fruitvale Station, more poverty.
I will make myself available. I will make myself available on Wednesday. Right.
Please, sir. We can always use your wisdom on this.
Right.
It's been real. And we'll do it again for this Wednesday. Any closing remarks, Captain? Captain Kirk, any closing remarks?
Just to add to that article pertaining to Jay-Z, why do we let a person who lives in the hood, did crimes, never got convicted of some of these crimes, and then go ahead and go to college and able to come up? You know why? Because this is America. That's why we allow these type of things. There you go. That's all.
All right, folks. This is a mashup. Jamiroquai, Eric B., Rakim. It's real, folks. See you on Wednesday. It's been a pleasure.
I shouldn't have left you without a strong rhyme to step to. Think of how many weeks shows just left through. Time's up, I'm sorry I kept you thinking of this. You keep repeating your miss. The rhyme from the microphone solo with. So you sit by the radio, hand on the dial soon. As you hear it, pump up the volume. Dance with the speaker till you hear it blow. Then plug in the headphone, cause here it go. It's a four-letter word when it's heard to control your body to dance. So, dot text the tempo like a red alert. Just reflex and let it work. When this is playing, you can't get stuck with the steps. So can say, and I'ma still come up with a gift to be swift. Follow the leader, the rhyme will go deaf with the record that was mixed a long time ago. It could be done, but only I could do it. For those that can dance, then clap your hands to it. I start to think, and then I sink into the paper like I was ink. When I'm writing, I'm trapped in between the line. I escape when I finish the rhyme. I got so. A beat like this might tempt me to pose, show my rings and my faggot chain. Grab the mic like I'm on Soul Train, but I wait, cause I master this. Let the others go first so the brothers don't miss. L.E.B. break the stick.
You got it!
Rakim will begin when you make the mix. I'll experiment like a scientist. You wanna rhyme? You gotta sign my list. Cause I'm a manifest and bless the mic, I'll hold you on the next. Then you gotta have soul. Cause if you ain't got it, I'ma make an encore. Take the mic, make the people respond for the R. Cause that's the way it'll have to be. If you wanna get on after me, think about it, wait, erase your mind. Forget it, and don't waste your time. Cause I'll be in the crowd if you ain't controlling it. Drop the mic, you shouldn't be holding it. This is how it should be done. This style is identical to none. Some try to make it sound like this, but you're getting me. So upset that I'm wet cause you're sweating me. I just seem like a microphone theme. The MC is my theme, I get hype.
When I hear drum roll, rock is on the mic, and you know I'm my name. First of all, I'm a soloist, a soul controller, so I can get stronger as I get older. Constant elevation, cause expansion. I write my rhymes while I cool in my mansion. Then put it on tape and in the city I test it. Then on the radio, the art requested. You listen to it, the concept might break you, cause almost anyone can relate to. Whoever's out of hand, I'ma give them handles. Light them up, blow them out like candles. Or should I just let them out to give them a hand so they can see how I felt? I'm not bold just cause I rock gold. Rock cameras on the mic, and you know I rock gold. So before I get too hot, I wanna see which posse can dance the best. It should be easy cause the beat is fresh. Now people from uptown, Brooklyn bound, the Bronx, Queens, the Long Island Sound. Even other states come biting back. It ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Since you came here, you have to show and prove. And do that dance until it don't move. That's all you need is soul, self-esteem, and release. The rest is up to you. Rock him or say peace.